Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller, and really pleased to talk about a cornucopia of tasty delights with our Vicars of Vegetables. With me in the studio, Erwin Goldman, professor of horticulture and associate dean in the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Erwin, nice to see you back.
Larry, thanks so much for having us back, and nice to see you as well. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. And Jim Nguyen, who is not quite with us by phone yet, he's in Costa Rica with a group of students, and I'm sure that at some point we'll have him on, and we hope he will be reporting to us from Costa Rica. So we'll see what happens as time goes on. He's done this in the past. In fact, it turns out pretty much every January.
Every January, Jim takes a group of, I think, about 22 students to Costa Rica and now Nicaragua to do a course in tropical horticulture.
Yeah.
So they visit production and they look at all sorts of horticulture down there. It's really a popular course.
Well, I'm hoping we're able to establish contact with him. And if we can't, I tell you what, Erwin and I are here and we're going to take your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. If you have any haikus, we'd love to hear those as well, as long as they relate in some way to our vegetables that we're going to be talking about. I got an email, Erwin, of the Better World Campaign announced today the winner of its onday1.org contest, which collected over 4,000 ideas, nearly 70,000 votes, to identify the On Day One community's top recommendation for the incoming Obama administration.
Mm-hmm.
And the winner of that event said that the White Roger Doiron's winning idea recognizes the economic, energy, and environmental benefits of local organic food production, and he proposes creation of a small victory garden on the White House grounds that would demonstrate the many benefits of local environmentally sound food production.
That would be a brilliant. I would love to see that happen in Washington, D.C.
I think that's a great idea. And as reading through it a little bit, the White House could serve as a model at a time of, we've got some economic and environmental problems right here. And by planting an organic, sustainable garden at the White House, the Obamas, I doubt that the president would be out there actually digging the garden himself, but they would lead by example. And hopefully that would inspire some collective action, the kind of action that we need to tackle some of these challenges of food security, climate change, and energy dependence. And the interesting thing, as the winner of the On Day One contest, the winning guy is from Maine, actually, received a round-trip ticket and hotel accommodations to participate in the inaugural ceremony at the White House. But I think that's kind of a great idea, Erwin.
And if Jim Nienhuis were here right now with us, he would say that, Obama's a fan of arugula. So that garden would have to have that particular green in it. But I would love to see that.
I think it's a great, great, great idea. Well, I know we have some callers who will be, and Jim's working on with getting Jim Nienhuis. Jim Packard's working to get Jim Nienhuis with us right now. But give us a call. If the number rings, just let it ring for a bit, and Jim will get to you. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us, and the email address is talk@wpr.org. And we do see, as a matter of fact, vegetables do come from Costa Rica that arrive here in the U.S., if I'm not mistaken.
Absolutely. Absolutely. More and more. And I think there's also quite a substantial trade all throughout Central America of ornamentals, cut flowers that are coming up from that area as well.
Well, it'll be fun to talk with him excuse me, it'll be fun to talk with him about that. Now, do you, in your own home, do you receive all the vegetable books, the gardening books and so forth?
The seed catalogs,
seed catalogs
and that type of thing?
Yeah.
I do, actually. And I love looking through seed catalogs. And, of course, this is a time when I think a lot of people are doing that. And it's just a wonderful thing to think about and plan, isn't it?
Oh, it's great. And I tell you what, I think Jim is on. Let's see. Jim, are you there?
Hey, Larry, how you doing?
Just fine. And how are you?
Well, I'm here, working hard. hold it. Oh, excuse me. Let me get that margarita out of the way. Yeah, that's fine. I'm working really hard here, Larry.
We were just talking about Irwin and I were talking about Costa Rica and the fact that we'll see the arrival of vegetables from Costa Rica here in Wisconsin.
Absolutely. In fact, just right next to this village is 5,000 hectares, which is like, God, what is that, like a million acres of melon for export, cantaloupe.
Wow.
So those ribbed, you know, Western shipper melons are being produced here, and those are the ones that come up to our grocery stores. Although, you know, they usually taste pretty bad. I don't know why we'd buy those, but we do.
Well, we buy them because it's January. And it's a melon.
Okay, that's fair.
My guess would be that there's probably right around 100, 110 degree swing in temperature between Wisconsin and Costa Rica.
Well, it has cooled off considerably today. It's in the low 80s.
Oh, no.
Yeah, a lot of people are wearing sweaters and things. Yeah, people overreact here.
Oh.
Yeah, it's probably, about 55, 60 there or something?
Yeah, it's about, about 20 below? No, it's not that bad.
I think it was 9 degrees below zero, Jim, when I was walking into work this morning. I think with the wind chill, maybe 25 or 30 below. So
that's a slight difference.
Yeah, the wind chill here. I bet the wind chill here drops it to. I bet it drops it to 80. Yeah. Hey, we got wind chill, pal. Yeah, no problem here.
Oh man, what's the soil type like in Costa Rica? Is soil similar to some of the soils
we
find here?
Because they have a lot of the great soils for coffee production. You know, are up in the mountains, and those are all volcanic. You know, so those are terrific. So they have, you know, extremely good. They have high fertility and extremely good drainage. On the lowlands, the soils tend to be, you know, highly oxidized. You know, so they're not terribly productive. So there's a lot of inputs used, especially in that melon field. I would have to say there's a lot of inputs being used.
Okay. Well, I tell you what, we have callers who want to visit with you. So
okay.
Let's go to Joe in Eau Claire first. Joe, hi. Thank you for calling.
You're welcome. My question is how to grow peppers. I've gardened for at least 40 years, and I have sandy soil. They're in the sun. Last few years, the plants have flourished. They get 18 inch to 24 inches tall. They blossom real good, and then no peppers. But the plants stay beautiful and green, but I just don't get any peppers.
Yeah. I've been in the situation before. Maybe Irwin has a comment, but I've been in the situation where you're in Eau Claire, right?
Yep.
Well, boy, that's a little cool. My problem has been occasionally that you will get very, very, ironically, you will get very high temperatures and you get what they call pollen blast.
Oh?
Which means that the flowers will not set. I mean, they're going to be the pepper plants are, we don't have enough insect activity for the most part to have the insects, you know, the right bee to affect cross-pollination. So you have to self-pollinate.
Okay.
And what you often happen is that you'll have these high temperatures and the pollen will blast. It'll sort of burn.
Oh.
Right? And it doesn't allow for self-pollinization. I remember I had plants. I was growing my poblanos, and I had plants. My God, they must have been. They were as tall as me, and they were 6 foot. Not a fruit on them.
Oh.
And they didn't set until they wouldn't set during all of August. They didn't set until late September. And of course, you know, then we got our frost.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But you know what I would do? I would, you know, go to the, you know, maybe somebody, you've got somebody who successfully grows peppers,
yep,
or maybe the
yep.
county agent. Look for varieties.
Okay.
I bet you can, there's a vast difference in the abilities of different varieties to, you know, for earliness and their ability to set fruit. Because I was doing variety trials for quite a while when I was trying to find varieties that I could cross from to make my Super Poblano.
Okay.
And I noticed that there were varieties out there that would set like crazy in the hot sun, you know, and just beating low, no moisture conditions under stress, and others would just, just nothing.
Nothing. Okay. All right. Thanks for calling, Joe. Yeah, appreciate the call. And, you know, before we got you on the air, Jim, we were talking about the winning entry in a contest about what should be done on day one. It was on dayone.org, I think, that held this contest. The winner was someone who recommended that a victory garden, be placed on the White House grounds. And I thought it was Erwin and I both thought it was kind of a cool idea,
an organic victory garden.
Mm-hmm. Gail, I could go for that.
Yeah, well, yeah. Let's go. Gail in Janesville has something that might relate to that. Gail, hello.
Good morning. Just a very quick question. What's the definition of a victory garden?
Okay.
Well, this is like a World War thing. This is my. Yeah. I'm the old one, old enough to know.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because this, well, my parents taught me this. That was during the Second World War, right? Victory gardens were because of the scarcity of, you know, food, right? That was a huge movement to have individual families grow gardens, and those were called victory gardens.
And I think they've been associated with more than just World War II. I think other wars.
Back that far. I know that the Spanish American War.
The Spanish American.
Consider that you associate with me. That's not true.
Yeah, I have to remember that. But you know the idea of citizens planting gardens in their own, around their own homes to, I guess you could say, free up more food for the war effort was the idea behind the victory garden. But I think it got its biggest sort of push during the time of World War II. And, of course, there was a big public campaign at that time.
It was a huge, huge marketing campaign to get people to garden. And I tell you, what I'm hearing from extension horticulture agents that they're hearing in the counties is a big increase in interest in people wanting to garden vegetable gardens again for this coming year. So,
see, this economic depression is going to revitalize our country. It's going to turn us towards gardening.
Well, let's hope.
Yeah, it's going to be mental health. It's going to be great food. Hey, we're a little poor, but say what? We can eat well.
Lillian in Greene County, it's your turn. Hi, Lillian. Lillian, are you? Oops, I'm sorry. Are you there?
I'm here.
Hi, go ahead.
Yeah, well, that Super Poblano pepper caught my attention.
Ooh, yeah.
So, I mean, like, see, I grew up in California, and I've spent a lot of time elsewhere, too, but I just love poblanos, and I've grown some here. They've done pretty well, but what's so super about yours?
Well, like, what's super about it is that it will grow in Wisconsin. The poblanos tend to be, you know, it's a Mexican pepper, and it's not well adapted to Wisconsin because it requires too long a growing season. I mean, if I wait, in the classic cultivar is Ancho 101.
Yes.
Right? You probably grew that down there in Sacramento or L.A., wherever you were.
Suck a tomato in Humboldt County.
Right there, old Humboldt County. There's no Humboldt County in California, is there? Okay, sorry.
But we grew poblanos here a couple years ago.
We crossed it. What we did was we crossed Ancho 101 basically with the earliest pepper out there.
Okay.
And our whole objective was to create a very early maturing poblano.
Okay.
And I went around to, any number of, you know, garden shows and county fairs and et cetera last year, and I was roasting peppers, and the reports back to me, you know, and I'm not an intimidating guy, you know what I mean? I mean, people could come up to me and speak the truth, you know? The reports back to me were things like, Oh, Jim, those are so delicious. And so
Jim,
I'm taking
wanna,
that to heart.
Do you want to share the name of that variety that you created? Because I think it's quite unique.
Well, there are several. Which one do you remember?
I was thinking of the Wisconsin Wosta.
The Wisconsin Wosta.
Which is the name of that variety that Jim's created because it's a poblano specifically to be grown in the Midwest for roasting.
Cool. Where can it be? Where can I get it?
Well, let's see, what you do is you send us a quick letter.
Okay.
And you can include the Rolex.
I'm sorry, include the what?
the Rolex watch.
Yes.
So, you know, I mean, we're public servants, you know what I mean? So you just send us a quick letter and request it. But if you wrap it in the Rolex, then the actual seed will be sent.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Yeah.
Hey, well, I actually called in with a question about potatoes. So
okay.
When I've got I'm on a ridgetop, full southern exposure, some trees to the east, but when is the best time to put in potatoes?
In the spring, okay.
In the spring, I got that.
Well, no, I know. I was telling Jim in the spring, not you. I was making sure that Jim's
paying attention over there.
When do we normally plant potatoes? Are they fairly early?
Yeah,
they're a pretty early crop. I think once.
Because I know, you know, when I was in Humboldt County, California, and when I was up in Washington State. You know, we put in things like that in some areas, like on Washington's birthday, and that's not possible here.
No, but you could do it in late April.
Late April.
You certainly could. I don't know. You know, in terms of optimal time, I think you'd probably go a little bit later than that. But
okay, late April.
Yeah, late April, May. Early May.
Early May would probably be safe.
Okay.
I mean, they're so cold tolerant.
Yeah, they're...
You can
right.
Plant them as soon as you can get them in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You might be able to get in the field in late April.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, well, the field's pretty, it's pretty, you know, I've got a limestone ridge here and clay soils, so.
I would devote most of the acreage, though, to poblanos. Really.
I mean,
potatoes. I mean, you can get those anytime. Poblano, that's where you want to invest your effort.
Thanks for calling, Lillian. Appreciate your call. We're talking a cornucopia of tasty delights today with our vicars of vegetables, Jim Nienhuis and Erwin Goldman from the University of Wisconsin-Madison Department of Horticulture. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking vegetables today with Jim Nienhuis, professor in horticulture at UW-Madison and a haiku poet as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, he is.
I didn't write a haiku for today.
Well, you should be pondering that. He's with his students on location in Costa Rica, so he's with us by phone. Erwin Goldman with me in the studio, professor of horticulture and associate dean in the College of Ag and Life Sciences at UW-Madison. So if you have a question about vegetables or if you have a haiku that you want to share with us, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org, and we can hear the waves lapping on the shore in the background.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I just got back from the beach, you know. Hey, you hear the chickens, you hear the motorcycles. Yeah, it's great here.
I just picture you with your lawn chair, you know, at the shore there with the waves kind of rolling over the over your feet.
That's pretty much what study abroad is all about. Yeah, that's it.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
You got it.
Let's go to Sharon in Shatek, by the way. Sharon, hello to you.
Good morning, good morning.
Morning.
What happened to canceling out-of-state travel? Well, let's skip that part. Good Friday, on top of the ground, cover them up with hay or straw. Ruth Stout says they'll make it every time, and they do. Potatoes.
Hmm. So what day again?
She said Good Friday.
Oh, Good Friday.
So
good
that's
Friday. It's April 10th.
Uh-huh.
Even up here in Barron County, you put them on top of the ground, and you cover them up with hay or straw.
And Ruth Stout grew some mighty fine potatoes.
Yes, she did.
Thanks, Sharon.
You're welcome.
Appreciate the call. All right. Yep. Yeah. And you guys, we've talked about Ruth Stout in the past. She's passed on now, but she was quite a character, but a really good gardener. Somebody who avoided work as much as possible when it came to the garden. Everything just went under the mulch or in the mulch, and that's and she got amazing crops. Amazing crops. Ken and Hingham, your turn now. Hi, Ken.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I know that Jim always, your guests like eggplants so much, so that I hear a recommendation that I heard was a good use for them.
Okay.
They said you should plant them on the edge of your garden because they attract potato bugs, and then use them for baiting the tomato potato bugs.
Now you're talking.
The other thing I had for the gentleman trying to grow peppers, I used to have the same problem, and I think I was outsmarting myself because I tried to get them in early. And
yeah.
If you put them in too early, the cool nights just keep those blossoms from setting, I think.
Yeah.
And if you put wait, be patient and put them in a little later so that it's nice and warm in the evenings. I forget what the temperature is supposed to be, but that helped me.
June is a safer time for peppers, for some peppers at least.
Right.
For planting them. Sure. Yeah, that's a good point. Thank you, Ken, for calling. Well, maybe you guys don't. Maybe you guys
don't. I can't wait.
Well, you can't wait.
I can't. I just can't wait. I got to get them in.
Now.
Yeah, okay.
You're liable to run into some
problems. A little patience would pay off. I can't. I don't have it.
Frank and Cedarburg, on to you now. Hi, Frank.
Hi. Erwin, I'd like to know, what do you use for fertilizer for your peppers that you're always talking about?
Well, that's Jim. Jim, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I mulch them heavily, you know, with leaf mulch, but I really apply a water soluble 20-20-20, which I consider organic.
Okay.
Yeah. In my definition, that's organic.
You're your own certifying agency.
I personally certify it as organic.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And you get some big plants.
Yeah, we don't play around. I mean, poblanos are there to be eaten.
Did you have a follow up, Frank?
I said I've been trying for years to get some big pepper plants. So if you're going to use 20-20-20,
soluble.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. All right, Dolores in Kenosha, your turn. Hi, Dolores.
Oh, good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
I had a new little pepper that I tried last year, and it's a hot lemon, and it really has that nice lemon scent and flavor to it.
Oh, cool. I'm not familiar with that one.
Oh, and it turns a bright yellow. I got them in, I got everything in a couple weeks late. And then we got to the end of the season, and I had hundreds of these green peppers with little blotches of yellow that hadn't turned yet. And I thought, because they were so pretty. And I thought, oh, well, it was getting towards frost, so as they got pretty yellow, or mostly yellow, I'd bring them in, and I had them sitting on the counter, and I thought, and I was disappointed. But I found out that every single one of them turned yellow sitting on my counter, just like you bring in tomatoes that are starting to turn.
If I understand it right, this is a hot South American or Central American pepper, from Ecuador, the lemon pepper. Have you seen that down there?
No, I haven't. No, I have not. Wow, this is, you know, you guys open up a new world to me every show. Lemon pepper. Not familiar with that one.
You know,
it looks kind of like a jalapeno, doesn't it?
Yes, or maybe a little longer, like I had grown serranos.
Does it have some heat with it?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. I like that response. I like that, kind of response when we talk about capsaicin. Because some people, you know, the response is like, but no, hers was, yeah.
I showed it to my sister. I said, oh, look what I got, because I dried them and ground them up. And I had this nice jar, which I shared. And you have to smell this. Well, so we're smelling the perfume of these peppers.
The aroma of pepper.
We sneezed and cried for it. Hold it.
How many syllables
minutes
is that? The aroma of peppers.
Ooh.
Reaches your nostril. No, that's why I'm not a poet. Let's see. We've got to get a haiku out of this somewhere.
Well, the middle, the aroma the aroma of peppers is 7. So you need something before it and something after it.
Oh, five. That's right. Okay, yeah, 5, 7. What is it again?
5, 7, 5.
We're flexible on that. Yeah, we're not, you know, we're not anal poets.
The final line would be, and you cry with joy.
Oh, that's good, and that's 5.
We don't even need a leadoff line to that one. Just a 7-5 haiku.
Oh, thanks, Dolores.
Oh, thanks for your program.
So, Jim, that yellow pepper is like a cayenne, I think. And a cayenne is annuum, capsicum annuum. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so I think it's similar to a red cayenne, but it matures yellow. I think that's what that is.
Well, that, you know, I mean, it would be... Does it go from green to yellow?
Yes, it goes from green to yellow.
I think it goes from green to yellow. Yeah.
So that's just the yellow carotenoid.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Lycopene or carotene.
Just like we have tomatoes that do that. I think that's all that is.
Yellow tomatoes. White tomatoes.
There's another yellow pepper called the lemon drop, which is a different pepper. That's an ahi pepper, I think, was small, a much smaller pepper. This is a long pepper, a cayenne-like pepper, I believe.
And it's from Ecuador. According to apparently what I have here online.
Excellent.
As hot as any cayenne pepper, but with a truly unique flavor.
Fantastic.
Wow.
Fantastic.
I like that. Thanks, Dolores. We learned something new again today, as always. Tom in Belmont, we go to you next. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I'd like to ask about broccoli.
Okay.
I'm a novice gardener, and I was just wondering about harvesting it. And does it get more bitter every time you cut it off?
Didn't happen
to me.
Okay, broccoli. What about it?
Jim's our man. Let me make sure I understand your question. You said you're concerned about it becoming bitter the more you...
As I harvested it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they produce because broccoli is very, very low in those bitter compounds, the glucosinolates. So you know, that has the ring of the urban legend to me, that it would become more bitter as you harvest it. I bet that is only a result of stress, right? What broccoli will produce a main head, and then it will produce, if you harvest that one, then it'll simply shoot lateral buds, and those can be harvested, you know, for a long time. Of course, the problem is if you put broccoli in the spring, as you go into the summer, you know, it's going to... you know, it's the development gets so accelerated that the buds will overdevelop, and so it's very hard to harvest it at an optimal time. Plus, of course, you're going to be loaded with those those cabbage worms. I personally prefer, you know, I just think it's too much of a battle to do broccoli in the spring. I do broccoli in the fall, because then I can plant it along with all of the other brassicas, and I personally have much better luck with all of these crops going into the fall.
So now when would you plant broccoli?
I plant in July.
You plant in July?
Yeah, and then I transplanted by August, right? And then I simply allow the plants to go through the fall.
Oh, so that's another...
If you planted just the seed in the spring, would it be big enough?
Sure. I mean, you can plant it in the... I mean, I always do transplants with these as well. I don't direct seed any of the coal crops.
And cauliflower, does that grow back, or does you just harvest that once?
Cauliflower, you know, it takes so long to mature that you're only going to get one head. I mean, if you could keep it going forever, like for example here in the tropics,
Costa Rica,
yeah. If you were in the mountains, if you were in those freezing cold mountains where the temperatures drop down to 60, you could undoubtedly it would produce lateral buds. But cauliflower takes so long to mature. That's the problem. So you really have to count on one head per plant.
All right. There you have it.
Can I ask one more question?
Yeah, go ahead, Tom.
The lady that talked about covering up the potatoes, now I talked to an old duffer 20 years ago, and he told me, he said, them college boys, they don't know nothing about growing taters. You just throw it on the ground and cover it with straw. Then you got to keep covering it with straw.
And then
is that right?
Yeah, you keep covering it with straw.
No, I think that's... I mean, mulch, anything you can do to prevent weeds is just great, you know? I mean, it saves you all that work.
But do the potatoes grow in the straw?
Believe me, if there's one thing college boys know, it's how to avoid work.
I'll tell you, yeah, the potatoes...
We may not be smart in a lot of other areas, but hey, when it comes to avoiding work, we are like number one. I mean, that's why we're here.
The potatoes themselves grow right in the mulch.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They grow right in the mulch.
You don't even have to dig them.
You don't have to dig them.
That's the beauty of it. That's the beauty of that.
Up onto your bucket. Believe me.
That's the beauty. It's an above ground potato growing system. Totally self-contained that way.
Give it a try. Tom, you know, I bet there are going to be more than Tom that gives that a try this year. It'll be fun. I had a little spot in my own.
I'm like Mr. Mulch.
Yeah.
And like anything, like I get like five. Did you see that mountain? Remember that mountain I had of mulch out at Eagle Heights? Did you see that?
Oh, yeah, that was a thing of beauty.
Oh, my God, it was like 40 foot tall. It was like Mount Eagle Height.
Was that leaves from, that was from the city?
Leaf? That was from, right from our neighborhood there.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
They were all from our neighborhood, and there was a mountain of, and it took me the entire summer to actually, to dig out from Mount Eagle Hide. But now, I didn't have a weed in the field. It was beautiful.
I am nominating you, Jim. There is a position. You know, Larry mentioned earlier this day one project. It turns out that there's a solicitation on the web for a White House farmer. You know, they have a White House chef. They have
Barack
a White House chef.
We'd be cool together.
They've
too.
Got a chef. They've got all these other people. Michael Pollan has proposed a farm family in Illinois has proposed a White House farmer. And I am going to nominate you. Two Wisconsin farmers have already been nominated, but I think
Jim should be nominated.
I think he should be in contention there. It's about 5 acres, and I think you could do wonders with the place.
We'd be mulching. Barack and I'd be out there mulching.
You'd be out there with your arugula. Your arugula transplants.
Oh, yeah, those were beautiful. Uh-huh. Oh, my arugula was magnificent this year.
Well, I'll tell you what, we have more callers online. Tom, thank you so much for calling. By the way, you can join in, too, with your question. Having some fun talking vegetables with our Vicars of Vegetables today. Call us at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And Charles in Kennan, Wisconsin, up next. Charles, hi to you.
Hey, how are you today?
Great. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I'm kind of calling, and I've been listening, and we have a big garden.
Good.
And you know, you talk about the Depression days. Well, I have firsthand information from my father and my grandfather, you know, about the Depression. If you didn't grow a garden, you went hungry.
Yeah.
You know, and I've noticed something. I moved up here 7 years ago from southern Wisconsin, and we've had gardens. And I've noticed if anybody likes Brussels sprouts and broccoli seem to me they're a cold weather plant.
Mm-hmm.
And our Brussels sprouts turned out fantastic.
Oh, yeah. They do so well here. And then, of course, they do better as the season goes on.
Right.
Absolutely.
I mean, we let them go darn near into deer season.
Mm-hmm.
And they say they need, but Brussels sprouts need a couple of hard freezes to mature or something. Because otherwise, if you pick them too soon, they're bitter.
Well, that's exactly, yeah, you know? And you know what it is? It's all about sugars, right? It's
right.
All about conversion
of
starches to sugars. So they get sweeter, right?
Exactly.
So this is why the sort of urban legend is don't harvest your Brussels sprouts until after a frost. Because it's not that they're, I don't think it's that you know, because the glucosinolates are very low in these crops anyway. I mean, well, of course, a little higher in Brussels sprouts.
Uh-huh.
But it's all about producing sugars.
Right.
So they become sweeter as... It's called cold sweetening, right? It's the same process as you get a potato,
right?
And so they get sweetened up. So, God, what I love to do is harvest them, you know, after, like at Thanksgiving, you know, to go out and whack off.
Exactly.
Take my Costa Rican machete, whack off a Brussels sprout stalk, you know, and bring it in after it has a little frost on the Brussels sprout.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah.
That's what I gave some good friends of mine she never had Brussels sprouts before. You know, and I gave him like four stalks. I didn't cut them off or anything. And, you know, I cut all the leaves off, and I gave them to him. And about a month later, she called me. She says, I have a new favorite vegetable.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, I love Brussels sprouts.
See, this economic depression is going to it's an opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Charles, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Maggie in Appleton up next, I believe. Here, let's see. Hold on a second. There we go. Maggie, hello.
Hi. I'm calling calling to find out if there's any pointers. I'm going to be starting a vegetable garden in my front yard because that's the only sunny space I have.
Cool.
And tilling under quite a bit of grass. And I'm wondering if your guest has any pointers in that new garden space where you're plowing under grass, besides mulching the daylights out of it. Is there anything else I can do so that my vegetables grow and my grass doesn't?
I like the mulching. I like the mulching till the, what did you say, the daylight's out of it?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
Okay.
That's my number one suggestion.
One of the things, you know, and I don't hear experts to help me out on this, but if you came in there with a, would it pay to come in there and take the sod off? One of those machines that just takes the sod off?
Rather than turning it all over?
Isn't that the, you know, you got to turn it under. I mean, there's got to be.
Yeah, you get a lot of.
That sod has to be taught a lesson.
Right. Well, and the problem with removing the sod in the area that we're in is that we don't have a lot of topsoil.
Okay, so you want all the.
You probably need that then.
Right, exactly.
Hey, it's just, you know what? All of that ugly sod is just going to become, you know, organic matter, which you're going to need
anyway.
Well,
and that's what I'm hoping, but I also know that it's going to grow.
No, it won't. Not if you mulch it.
I was wondering if there was anything else. The other question that I had is, we live in the ravine lots.
Okay.
And I don't know if you know what that means. It's actually an environmentally sensitive area inside of the city. We have deer, we have eagles, we have hawks, we have turkeys, we have owls, we have foxes, we have raccoons. Is there anything that I can plant to discourage foraging? That's something that's going to be possibly a crop for myself.
You could plant a nice big fence around the garden.
Alternatively, you could augment the vegetable portion of your diet with the red meat portion, because I'm putting a garden in my front yard.
All right, so it's in the front yard,
right?
And so you don't want to you can't put a fence that.
Correct.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know. Jim, Irwin, is there anything that...
my suggestion is, and it's not environmentally sensitive.
Okay.
I say, you know, the 22 rifle.
No. Although a couple of my neighbors might go along with that.
I think you're going to...
Economic depression, I'm simply augmenting the vegetable portion with some red meat.
There you go. Could I plant raspberries or something like that in the area to keep out the deer, or will they just forage right through the raspberries?
Oh, they'll forage right through the raspberries.
Will they?
Oh, okay. Absolutely. Yeah, that won't stop deer at all. So you would actually think that you'd have deer on your front lawn?
Deer walking down our street at certain times of the year. Yeah, especially in this cold weather where they come up from the ravine during twilight, and we see them all over the place. We actually had a deer get hit in a subdivision a couple of days ago, two circles over, because they're foraging right now. They're as desperate as everybody else because of this cold.
Yeah.
There are a number of lists of deer resistant plants.
Okay.
Not so much in the vegetables and fruits, though. I really don't know, and I don't have any good recommendations. But in the ornamentals and the shrubs and the trees, there's lots of plants that deer don't tend to eat. I mean, they will only under desperation.
Okay.
And so you can certainly find recommendations there. But Jim, I'm not that familiar with any vegetables and fruits that fit.
I think
that.
If we eat it, they eat it even faster.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, but putting a box hedge or something like that around the garden might be an idea and make my neighbors come here too.
Oh, because your neighbors will think, you know, garden. I mean, if you put up the 20-foot tall steel reinforced fence, you know, that you have to look at the zoning aspects there of your neighborhood.
One of the things that another listener, this is a while back, called in and said that she did to discourage the deer. She ran a radio out to the garden, and she actually said she turned it on to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Okay.
Well, there you go.
Because it's talk, And so there's a it's talk, and that helped keep the because the talking it sounded like people were there,
right?
And was convinced that it had a big difference in keeping the deer out.
Well, that might be something I can try, and of course I will keep it tuned to Wisconsin Public Radio.
You have to, Meg. You have to. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Jim Nienhuis and Erwin Goldman are vicars of vegetables from the University of Wisconsin here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking vegetables today with our vicars of vegetables on this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller, Jim Nienhuis, and Erwin Goldman from the University of Wisconsin, our guests today. Pleased to have you listening in. Give us a call with your question at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. We had, Carol from Caledonia, Minnesota, emailed us and wonders, can you recommend vegetable varieties that are best for freezing and canning, or can you recommend a website that would guide me to the best varieties for putting up food? The seed catalogs are kind of vague and often say basically the same thing about most varieties.
Oh, yeah.
I'm especially interested in sweet corn for freezing, green beans for canning, and tomatoes for sauce.
Oh, tomatoes for sauce. Definitely, she wants, you know, this when I moved here from, because I worked for Heinz, right? When I went to work at the UW, I was really disappointed because the tomatoes in Wisconsin tend to be pretty watery. So that was another thing we worked on, was developing a high solids. I would say tomatoes for making sauce, you want to have a very high solids tomato. And we do actually have one. It doesn't have anywhere near the clever name. We call it 1x10.
1x10.
1x10. And it is a high solids tomato. And that's the one I use. I put up 168 quarts of tomato sauce.
Whoa.
This summer.
Whoa.
So I'm really into this. So that's what I find, because I'm not known for my patience, and I can't stand, sitting there and boiling it forever. So a higher solids tomato will reach a higher consistency more quickly. So you definitely want to have a high solids type tomato. I mean, mine happens to be early, but there are other varieties that are, you want to use a canning tomato. You don't want to do, any large, fresh market tomato is simply not going to can well. Snap beans, we've tried everything, but I really like those, those sweet and sour snap beans. I actually don't, can them to mush. I like the sort of sweet and sour where you add the vinegar. Those are my favorites.
And I like
sweet
those
corn,
too.
I really don't know.
Sweet corn, my mother froze sweet corn. And it was wonderful. I tell you, in the middle of the winter, that sweet corn tasted a lot better. It tasted like it came off the cob.
Did she can it or did she freeze it?
She froze it.
Oh, okay. Maybe sweet corn is a much better thing frozen than it is canned.
Well, I wanted to mention on sweet corn, there are several types. You know, you have your sugary types. Those are the old normal, even now heirloom types of sweet corn. This is a creamy texture to it, and it has quite a bit of sugar. But you have two other types that are much sweeter, the sugary enhancer types and the shrunken types, or the shrunken two types. Those are also called super sweets. So the sugary enhancers and the super sweets have a different texture to them than the old corns, and so I think you can get very different qualities in the canned or frozen product depending on whether you're using the heirlooms or whether you're using the new ones.
You know, I remember a funny story about that too. That there was an old canning company that in the 70s, because one of the big customers for Wisconsin sweet corn is Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny story is that they, rather than using the sugary types that Erwin just talked about, they were growing shrunken twos. So they were growing a super sweet. So they canned it up and shipped it to Japan, and the Japanese clients sent it back, and they said it wasn't cooked.
Because
they tend to not have that creamy texture.
and they thought it was, you know, they just thought it wasn't cooked enough. Isn't that odd?
Yeah, and I agree. And so, you know, from a canning or canning point of view, you have with the super sweet something that's a little more watery, although it's sweeter.
Yeah.
And so you really need to think, do you want the sort of creamy texture and slightly less sugar of the normal types? That's probably what you froze in your family, Larry. That was probably the
shrunken too
the
is also known as dental floss. That's another name for it.
Well, I tell you, it tasted. That's one of my great memories in January or February, or even December, getting into that frozen sweet corn. But it was wonderful.
That's exactly how I feel about tomato sauce in January, because the only reason I can survive after I get back from the temperature just dropped here. I'm sorry. It's below 85 now. I'm sorry. Didn't mean to be distracted by that thermometer.
Oh man. Well,
sorry.
Colleen and Bailey's Harbor. I'm cutting Jim off right now, and we're going to Colleen. Colleen, hi.
Hi. My husband and I own a home in Vieques, Puerto Rico, and we're hoping to move there within the next few years. And I was wondering if your guest could recommend any books on tropical vegetable gardening in the tropics.
Ah, Jim, what do you think?
Oh, there are some. I don't have them in front of me, so I don't remember the names. But you could. I do have several good sources that I use, especially for, I think there are some good books. The other thing is that the University of Puerto Rico has a really outstanding agriculture school
in Mayagüez, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And they are really knowledgeable people there, and those would be the folks to go to. Although you're going to be producing things like sweet potatoes and the other thing you're going to be growing is a lot of cassava,
mm-hmm.
and squash does well there, and then tomatoes.
Uh-huh.
You're
so you're going to be growing some unusual things, but I would say that I would just take it. Anyway, Mayagüez is a lovely little city, and the island isn't like that big. So I would say go over to UPR there in Mayagüez and talk to them, and I bet they have a heck of a lot of great information. I know they're really trying to promote alternative crops, and they consider vegetables. They want to have much greater production of vegetables. Ironically, Puerto Rico imports almost a large percentage of its food.
Right, and on the island that we're on, which is off of Puerto Rico.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was on the island. Okay.
Well, it's part of Puerto Rico, but it's just east of.
Is that
Puerto
the one
Rico?
that we bomb
yes.
all the time
uh-huh.
that the U.S. Navy bombs? Are you going to be able to sleep through that?
Well, they're gone. The Navy's
okay,
gone now.
Okay. Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't know they had left. Okay.
Yeah. They're gone, and it's Fish and Wildlife. Service only.
And a lot of craters.
Actually,
in a way, they
might
have a unique way of tilling the soil.
Yeah.
there's a blog that I just came across, actually, after you raised this question, called La Gringa's Blogocito.
Uh-huh.
And it's a woman gardening and living in Honduras and talking about vegetable gardening. So it looks like there may be some interesting web resources on your particular question.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling.
But don't hesitate to grow new and different things.
Yes, don't.
Yeah. Don't just bring down your Wisconsin vegetables. Grow some new stuff.
Susie and DePier, hi.
Yeah.
Good morning. I think it still is.
Yes.
I have a suggestion maybe for the gal who is going to mulch the daylights out of her garden.
Yeah.
That was great. My suggestion is we also have an urban deer issue. And a neighbor suggested, after the first raid they made on his garden, told us that what he did was, after trying many other methods of discouraging his little friends to come for lunch, that he simply strung one band of police tape around his garden, which clearly says, police line, do not cross. And I hate to tell you this, but the deer never came back.
How about that?
Now, take that for whatever you will. Either they have very intelligent deer in our neighborhood, or it is
respectful.
A possible effective deterrent.
I would say very respectful.
Respectful.
Because, you know, they didn't want to return to the scene of the previous night's crime.
Yeah, I'm wondering.
All right, so the yellow tape. What else have you got for us, Susie?
The legit question is I'm soon to become a gentleman hobby farmer. And in view of the fact that we have had a little bit of an economic change, shall we say, my husband and I are looking for something, you know, perhaps that we can do with our acreage as a little bit of an income producer that would be fun and social.
Yeah.
And the thing that we would like to do is to perhaps start up a pick-your-own blueberry operation.
Okay.
Is there any hope for that in the state of Wisconsin?
Pick-your-own blueberry operation. What do you think, Erwin?
Well, you know, this is really popular in Michigan, in the corner of Michigan, that's right, and probably in Indiana, where...
Because you need those acid soils, you have to acidify the soil.
That's the biggest... I agree. I think that's the biggest limitation is that, you know, now you could do it on a sandy soil. I think you could acidify it. I don't know. You'd use something like calcium sulfate or something like that, perhaps to lower the pH.
Mm-hmm.
So but it's doable. It's being done over there in Michigan. I visit one every summer, but I think you'd have to pay attention to some of those issues.
Especially the soil acidity is really important. Well, tell you what. Thank you very much for calling, Susie. Our Vicars of Vegetables will be with us right up till 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller with my two guests, Jim Nienhuis, with us now. He's on location with his students in Costa Rica, professor in horticulture, gardening haiku poet, Erwin Goldman of Horticulture, Associate Dean of the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences at UW-Madison, our other guest. He's with me in the studio. Questions, give us a call or send us an email. The email's talk@wpr.org or .org, and the number is 1-800-642-1234. And just before we go to the phones here, I actually have several emails in front of me that all kind of relate to the same thing, and that is starting seed indoors in terms of timing and then in terms of, you know, kind of secrets, what you need to do to actually get those seeds up and growing and then getting them out into the garden. And, Jim, maybe we'll turn to you first because you do a lot of that.
Yeah. Well, I think the secret is light. You know, you need really high-intensity light for your seedlings. I will say, though, that one thing I do love about the winter is that I start my leeks in mid-February. And so I'm looking forward to coming back and in just a few short weeks planting my leeks. But I think the mistakes that I've made over the years were simply, you know, like in a basement or in is simply not having, you know, anywhere near the intensity of light that's required. I mean, you really have to get, you know, those high output fluorescent bulbs and put them about an inch and a half away, you know, from the seedlings. And then as the seedlings grow, I simply raise the light a little bit. But that was my biggest mistake, was not having enough light.
So if you don't have enough light, they're going to etiolate. They're going to get real thin, right? They're going to get kind of spindly. And that's gonna make a poor transplant, right?
And it's embarrassing. You know, it's embarrassing thing. You know, like you're putting out this little etiolate, and then it falls over. You know, I can't deal with it.
So, what about timing? Is there a place people can go? Does Extension? I was trying to remember. I'm pretty sure Extension's
I think your suggestion was a good one, Larry, that you should, you know, in Madison, for example, you know, a lot of my summer vegetables, you know, like the tomatoes and peppers and things, I'll put out, you know, basically either the last week in May or the first week in June. And so you simply time it. You simply go back, you know, 6 weeks before that. Remember that your peppers take longer to germinate than will your tomatoes. So I simply move it back, and I'll start them probably I'll plant some in March, I'll plant some in early April, and I'll try to time it so that I'll have a, you know, a 4 or 5 inch seedling by late May or late June. I think one mistake that I see is that the garden centers offer these like 40-foot tall tomato plants, you know.
Yeah.
And you ever go to the garden, they already have tomatoes on them, right?
Yes.
So you put those out in at June 1st, and of course all they do is basically drop all of those fruit. You know, and they won't. My experience is that you put in one of those monstrosities that you pay $15.95 for, and you get nothing out of it. The tomatoes that I put in that were 3 inches tall, they're producing faster.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a good tip. Those are all good tips, as a matter of fact. Look at that seed packet and, you know, just kind of go back from when you want to start to plant. Back it up. Pat in Land O'Lakes, it's your turn. Pat, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Hi. See, I have a recipe for freezing corn that you don't have to blanch it. You take 15 cups of corn and you take it off the cob with your electric knife.
Yep.
And then you take 3/4 cup of sugar, 5 cups of ice water, and 2 teaspoons of salt. Mix it all together, throw it in plastic bags, throw it in the freezer, and just when you're ready to use it, put it in the microwave for 5 minutes, just like that, and you've got the most awesome fresh corn you ever want to
take. Yeah, I think that's what my mom did, or something similar to that. Go back and do that. Do the amounts again for us, will
you? You take 15 cups of corn.
15 cups of corn.
Raw. You don't blanch
raw.
It.
That's what my mother did. She used an electric knife
yeah.
to take it off. Okay.
And then you take 3/4 cup of sugar.
3/4 cup sugar.
5 cups of ice water.
5 cups ice water.
And 2 teaspoons of salt.
You know, this is exactly the same recipe I use for a margarita.
Oh!
Yeah, just, you know, put a little salsa in there and you got it.
So we got 15 cups of corn raw,
yeah.
and then we got 3/4 cup of sugar, 5 cups, five cups of ice water, and 2 teaspoons of salt, and you mix all that together, and then you apportion them out into packets or whatever, or maybe just one big bag, and there you go.
And like I say, if you do it in meal-sized bags...
That's what my mother always
yeah,
did.
Yeah, just throw it in the microwave for 5 minutes, and hey, you've got the most awesome fresh corn you ever want to taste. And it's quick and easy to do.
Yeah, I think that's what my mom did. Thank you, Pat.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. And Elizabeth in Washburn, your turn. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hello. I have a whole list here of things. The first thing is, mulch is wonderful if you don't have slugs. Most of Wisconsin has slugs. I can't even put down a handful of anything but what I don't have slugs in it the next morning. And there isn't enough beer in Milwaukee to get rid of all the slugs in northern Wisconsin. And the second thing is, you talked about Michigan blueberries. We live in Wisconsin. You should be promoting Bayfield blueberries, not Michigan berries. All right, sorry about that. And Rodale Press did a survey on string beans, freezing string beans, I'm going to say 5-6 years ago, and they said it was all in the temperature, and most people didn't have it cold enough temperature in their deep freeze for a quick freeze to make good frozen string beans, and I found out, yes, it does make a difference.
Yeah.
And I have enough deer around. I had to put up a 6-foot fence, and I have had to put all my raspberries in the fence to keep the deer out, and I wish I could grow more, but I do all my canning of my tomatoes. And I use the 6-foot fence to grow cucumbers and pole beans on. And last year I used a corn gluten meal. The man was on your radio station,
yeah.
Larry, last year, and I was very happy with it. It completely eliminated the weeds.
Corn gluten meal. Yeah,
yes.
I've heard that too. In fact, we've talked about it in the past on the show. Well, what about this business with Jim? I know you do a lot of mulching. What about this business with slugs?
They don't eat much.
Yeah, Elizabeth is.
I live with them.
You live with them.
Yeah. You know, a little for them, a lot for me. That's the way I look at it.
And they can completely my zucchini, they can take, I mean, my broccoli leaves, they can almost riddle them so that I don't hardly have enough leaf left to supplant, to do away with the, for photosynthesis and so forth.
Wow.
In the summertime. It is...
You got a terrible slug infection. Well,
oh heaven! I really don't know the recommendation for to deal with the slug. It's not been a particularly big problem for me, and I've gardened in a lot of places, but not far northern Wisconsin. So it could be that your ecology just is conducive to slugs.
Yeah, it could be.
I don't know. We'll have to wait for a caller to see if there's got to be somebody out there who knows.
Well, there's slug bait. You know, there's some gardeners will bait slugs.
The beer thing.
With beer.
Yeah, and she said there's not enough beer in Milwaukee to kill off all of her slugs.
Some of them will try to cultivate and dry out the soil. I think that's another technique for slugs because they'll use drip irrigation, but that's hard to do.
Another thing is the people have. They'll mulch, but they'll leave the mulch, pull the mulch away from the plants a bit, and then they'll put something down as a diatomaceous earth or something that actually.
Oh, you know what I do though. Let me think about this.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, maybe one of the reasons I don't have a big, because I put down plastic, and then I mulch between the rows. So actually, what I do is kind of a rotation, right? So where mm-hmm. I had the plastic the one year, that's mm-hmm. where the inter-row space will be the following year.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be that the plastic is going to make the temperature blazing hot mm-hmm. right around the base of the plant. And what slug is going to go there?
That's a good technique.
And I'm going to try about a foot barrier of sand,
sand
around
is good.
The edge of the garden to see if that will keep them from coming in.
Sand is good. Do you have a do you grow garlic?
Because they will not crawl. It well is like diatomaceous earth. I've tried that, but that can be expensive. Because I
sure.
put over two dozen tomato plants to get enough.
Yeah, I would try the plastic. They're not gonna go either underneath that plastic or on top of it. All you're gonna have is fried slug.
Yeah. So the plastic, I think, is. And do you use clear plastic or black plastic?
I use black.
Use black. Okay. So there you have it, Elizabeth. I hope you'll give that a try. And I want to go to Mary in Milwaukee, who's been waiting quite a while. Mary, hello to you.
Hello. I'd just like to know if the gentlemen have any recommendations, if there's either a publication or a book they might recommend that suggests different varieties of herbs, for example, the different basils varieties and their uses and kind of gives a review of some of the different available seeds.
Oh, gosh, I bet one of the seed catalogs. I can't think of off the top of my head. What about you, Erwin?
There's some wonderful companies that specialize in herbs. There are lots of catalogs that do that. Let me pull up some of those for you here while we're talking.
You know where I got some really interesting types of basil, though, was from an Asian seed company. And, oh, my God, I can't think of the name of it offhand, but they sent me some samples. And they had just an amazing array of all places, Asia. But they had an incredible array of different basils. I've still got a bunch of that seed. Send me an email. And they sent me, like 1 pound packages. It was just enough basil to last you for 50 lifetimes. So I've got tons of that seed. If you'd like to try some of ours, they did well in Madison.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Thank you.
Sure, just send me an email. I'll send you some seeds.
If you send us an email, I can send you. There's just a tremendous array of companies that specialize in herb seed. And there are catalogs, and there's also web resources as well that you can find.
So if your email addresses could get a person could get those just going University of Wisconsin Department of Horticulture. You're listed in there with your email address.
Yeah, and our pictures are there. We're the good looking guys.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
Yeah,
very
so it's
much.
It's unmistakable.
All right, thanks very much. And while we're on the seed business, someone was wondering about where do you get the 1x10s tomato seeds?
Oh, well, that requires an actual physical mailing. because, you know, you want to wrap the Rolex in there. So you could try, you know, the email, and I'll read it, but it's going to take me a while to respond to that one. So if you send the regular email with the Rolex, the seat will be in the mail the next morning.
All right. Well, let's go to Josh in Brookfield next. Josh, hello to you.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Good. I had a solution to the deer problem.
Okay.
It may sound kind of bizarre, but my brother did it with his garden last year, and it worked wonders. One thing that you can do is take baby diapers and put them on posts around the garden.
Used baby diapers.
Used baby diapers with the baby poo inside. And the other thing is dog hairs. And just sprinkle the dog hair on the ground around the garden.
Yep.
They'll keep the deer and all types of critters out of the garden.
And your neighbors as well.
Yeah.
No, I can only imagine.
Well, thanks for that tip. If you've got happen to have a baby in the family, I guess why not give it a try? It couldn't hurt. Baby diapers and dog hair. And dog hair, of course, you'd have to be replacing that pretty often, but it could be done. We had a haiku.
Oh, heavens. Oh, good, good, good.
Janice from Rock Falls sent us a haiku relating to poblano, and it's...
Oh, gosh, let me write this down.
It's...
Okay.
The first line is, water, mulch, soil. Wisconsin poblano. Wow. Smell.
That's exactly how I feel about it. I have a, you know, the haiku is designed to create a mental image.
Yeah, I know. And we haven't gotten to the last line yet. So the first line is water, mulch, soil. The second line, Wisconsin poblano. Wow. Third line, smell, roast, eat, enjoy.
Mm.
I like that one. Janice, you did a good job. Janice did a good job on that one. Thanks, Janice. One of the problems with baby diapers is that they are very harmful to dogs who will eat them and get tangled up inside the diapers and so forth. So that is an issue that you have to worry about.
There's a haiku in that alone, yeah. Irwin, I think.
Probably. But let's go to Ken and Elkhorn next. Ken, hello.
Hey, how you doing today?
Good.
Recently there was an earthquake in Costa Rica. How severe was it and what part was it in?
Well, it was near the volcano. It was near one of the many volcanoes. It was near Poás. And it was much more severe than I had originally realized. The students and I were, of course, at the beach exploring the ecology at the beach, which I think is an important component of the trip. Right. So, you know, there is tropical horticulture, but, you know, there is a specific ecology there, and the students have to see that. So, actually, we were at the beach, and the bus driver who had taken us there, he was on his cell phone, and his wife had called him and said there was an earthquake, but we did not feel it at the beach for what reason we did not feel it.
Huh.
I did feel an aftershock here in the village that we're in the northwest corner of the country right now. We were near Poás about 2 days before, but obviously we avoided it. So all of my students, in fact, I think they're all back now, and they flew out yesterday. And I bet they're really experiencing a temperature shift. I couldn't understand why they were all taking pictures of the thermometer yesterday, and now I know why.
Yeah, now you know why.
Could you tell me, the name is escaping me, it's two words and orange is one of them. There's a hot pepper. Supposedly 850,000 Scoville units.
Oh, I think that's one of those. Where's that from? I can't remember the name. Off the top of my head, remember the name of that. But
is that the Scotch bonnet?
No.
Ironically, I think it came from Thailand. It was registered as the hottest pepper. You know, I love capsaicin, no doubt about it. But you know, there's a limit to my joy, and I do not, you know, I really don't go for the super, super hot ones. Because it sort of masks the wonderful flavor of the pepper.
Isn't it the orange habanero from the orange habanero pepper?
No, it's two words. It's Cheyenne orange. That's what it is.
Oh, Cheyenne orange.
I'm sure if you Googled hot pepper,
yeah,
I bet you'd find it. And I can't, you know, one of our USDA colleagues from South Carolina, Dick, help me here. USDA station
Dick,
in
Dick Ferry,
F-E-R-Y.
Yeah.
Dick Ferry developed a super hot pepper, and it was just, you know, it was happened to be a segregant in one of his populations. I met him at the horticulture meeting, and he said, I've worked 40 years developing varieties of vegetables. He said, the only one I get incredible amounts, he said, I get like boxes of mail is requesting this very, very hot pepper that he developed. So Dick Ferry at the USDA in Charleston, South Carolina, and he'll send you the seed for free. He said he'd send out thousands of packages of this very hot pepper, and he apparently it has a good flavor as well. But I like everything in moderation, and capsaicin I do enjoy, but you know, gosh, there's a limit. You know,
there's a limit to what you can do. Well, we've had some emails about blueberries, and we never did respond to our earlier caller's comment about, hey, you can grow some great blueberries, and they do grow some great blueberries in the Bayfield area. And since then, Nick wrote in to say that there's quite a nice pick-your-own blueberry operation near Osseo. They use high bush plants, and a successful operation
mm-hmm.
there.
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody else, Ramona in Ironwood, Michigan, says, I just wanted to note that blueberries grow very well in the wild and on a few berry farms in the Black River Falls area where the soils are plenty sandy and acidic.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So they're really, well, it kind of goes along with what you guys were saying. You need some acid soils. And if you've got, and there are some places in Wisconsin where you can find those conditions. And here's another one, another email. There's a blueberry farm outside of Clintonville and another one that's even more southwest. I think the one in Clintonville is called Blueberry Heaven.
Mm.
So
mm-hmm.
a person might, the person who was called in earlier, she might want to maybe Google Blueberry Heaven. She might find out some information from those folks as well.
Blueberry Heaven. Yeah, very spiritual.
Right. And with that, we have to close.
Can I give my last haiku?
All right, give it.
Okay. The temperature difference is 110. The beach is warm at Playa Hermosa. Will they ever fly home?
Jim, I need you. I need you for class next week. You got to come back.
Maybe we could do class, you know, from here. Is there any possibility, kind of a video link, Erwin?
No.
It sounds attractive, but
okay, I'll come back.
All right, thanks. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it very much. And Erwin, thank you so much.
My pleasure, Larry. Pleasure. Thanks for having us.
We'll have you back soon again. The Vicars of Vegetables, I'm certain we'll be back soon, and we'll do this all over again. Tomorrow, up until noon, from 11 to 12, we'll have some investment advice from Frank Armstrong, author of The Informed Investor. And then at noon on Monday, the official Wisconsin ceremonies honoring Dr. Martin Luther King will be playing that. And Tuesday, we will not be on next week Tuesday because of the inauguration. We'll be covering the inauguration ceremonies live on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you all for listening. Please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.